which this committee has debated many times, the issue of the number of the staffing in the department ever since Treasury some years back, I don't know whether it's 3 or 5, told the department that gave them a ceiling about the compensation of employees. One of the departments that suffered immensely is the Department of Home Affairs, especially on the civics branch. We did develop a plan, a proposition which we gave to Treasury, and you remember that Treasury gave us 266 million rand. And I've noticed that members were confusing this with the what you call the 10,000 unemployed graduate the program for digitization. These are completely two different programs altogether. It's only that you came to know about them at the same time. But the capacitation program of 266 million rand is completely separate from digitization, where we're looking at how many staff members do we add. And we have decided to capacitate, especially the counter-corruption, for obvious reasons, for the amount of work they are doing. Ever since February, when we did that operation in our offices in Krugersdorp, the amount of tip-offs we are getting from members of political parties, members of the public, and also political parties is overwhelming and heartwarming, honorable members. Every single day, people are pointing to where they think things are happening, and they are coming up because they now see action is being taken. So we have decided to increase the capacity of the counter-corruption by at least 12 members from the law enforcement agencies all around the country who are already experienced. We are going to try and mobilize them to join us. But the biggest increase we are doing in civics in order to deal with the embarrassingly long queues, part of the long queues, we have come to you many times to mention why there are so many long queues, but part of it is the issue of staffing. And we are going to try and increase the number of people, as you see, who are serving in civics. Also considering that during COVID, we lost 40 members in civics who are working in our front offices. Then we are also going to try and capacitate immigration. As I've already said, we are moving from 220 operation to 540 operation. Chairperson, let me stop there and give over to the DG to take you over. As you have already said, we don't have much time because of what's going to happen this afternoon. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you, Minister. thank you, Minister, for your remark. And we're going to request the DG to present. I think the DG, you have noted the committee request to talk to the presentation, because at least we have gone through the presentation ourselves, so that we work towards managing our time. DG?
No, thank you so much, Chairperson. Thank you to honorable members. Mosi, if we can load the presentation, please.
DJ, I'm the one who's loading it. Are you not able to see it, DJ?
No, we can see all your other details except the presentation.
Okay, let me just close.
Thank you. It's on the screen. If we can have it on the slide mode, please, Mr. Matonzi.
Okay. Busy. Is it fine now, BG?
It's disappeared again.
Okay, I think it takes time to appear. Oh. So no one can able to see it?
No, we stand by the DG.
Oh, okay. I don't know, because I can see it from my side. Okay, let me...
Can you must close it and reshare. Share your screen and reshare.
Yeah, that's what I've done now.
Yeah, no, now we go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, are you able to...
Thank you so much. If we can move to the second slide. That's just the presentation outline. Chairperson, I won't take a lot of time. I think the purpose the minister has outlined already. The outline will include the vision, the mission, of course, the mandate values, and then what is it that we're doing to contribute to the National Development Plan, and then our contribution in terms of commitments to the MTSF for the period 2019 to 2024. And then the National Annual Strategic Plan, those commitments. And then there are some key considerations that we had to look at for the 2022-23 Annual Performance Plan. And then there's a summary of the Annual Performance Plan targets, which will look at the work that we're doing in civics, immigration, the PMA, as the minister has indicated, and then administration. And then 8 will look at the targets per branch for the various branches, and then we'll then provide an overview, Chairperson, of the budget for the financial year, and then a recommendation to the committee. If we move to the next slide, slide 4, I think I've spoken to that one. Yeah, slide 4 then speaks to the vision, the mission, mandate, values, and outcomes. I think the committee is familiar with this slide, just to reemphasize that our vision is to ensure that we build a South Africa where identity, status, and citizenship are key enablers of citizen empowerment and inclusivity, including economic development and national security. On your top left, it's really the mission of the department that we want to carry out in terms of citizen empowerment and inclusivity, economic development, and national security. How do we want to do this? By ensuring that we have an efficient and secure custodian of citizenship and civil registration. Secondly, we'll want to securely and strategically manage international migration, and then to efficiently manage asylum seekers and refugees. And of course, the last one is to ensure that we efficiently determining and safeguarding the official identity and status of persons. Below that, it's really the values that we embrace as a department, being people-centered and caring, patriotic, carrying out our work in a professional and showing leadership, ensuring that we are effective, efficient, innovative, ethical, and having integrity in terms of the work that we're doing around counter-corruption. And we must always be security conscious and development oriented. Top right is really the mandate of the department, which is broadly divided into two, civic services and immigration services. I'm not going to restate the mandate. I think this committee is familiar with the first mandate, the second mandate, and the third mandate. And on your bottom right, it's really the outcomes that we'll speak to later on. If we can move to the next slide, Mr. Matonzi. This is how we're contributing to the National Development Plan, Chairperson, which is almost 10 years old this year. The major focus, of course, of the NDP is to confront those interlinked challenges of poverty, inequality, and unemployment by ensuring that we achieve higher growth rates. And as Home Affairs, there's a contribution that we make to the achievement of those targets or those objectives of the NDP. The first one, which is really ensuring that the inclusion of all citizens in democracy and development is enabled by providing them with a status and identity which gives them access to rights and services. And we have said this must be done in an efficient, effective, and professional and secured manner. The second one is to ensure that the DHA facilitate the acquisition of critical skills. And we do this in partnership with the Department of Higher Education and Training so that we're able to build our own skills base. And the third one is to ensure that we drive an integrated and coordinated border management to ensure that our borders are effectively protected, secured, and well managed. And then, of course, our contribution in terms of regional development, working with the SADC through Department of International Relations and Cooperation, and of course, the AU. And then the last one is to seize opportunities that are presented by the fourth industrial revolution as we embrace the technological advancements so that we're able to build a capable and developmental state by ensuring that all our modernization programs are able to reduce issues of fraud and also the cost of doing business. If we move to slide six, the next slide then basically provides Chairperson a distinction in terms of the APEX priorities and also the commitments in the revised MTSF commitment. Two key APEX priorities, economic transformation and job creation on your left, and then the other contribution that we make is towards social cohesion and safer communities. With regards to the first one, we'll want to ensure that there's an implementation of a revised visa regime through 90% of visa applications that are adjudicated within 4 weeks in this financial year. And then with regards to social cohesion and safer communities, I think...
We're losing you, DJ.
Are you able to hear me now? Maybe let me cut the video. For sure you'll be able to hear me well now. I think the minister spoke to issues around the establishment of the BMA, ensuring that the BMA is operational by 23-24 financial year at 18 ports of entry, in particular, six segments of the land border law enforcement area and one community crossing point. We'll want to ensure that the BMA is rolled out to an additional seven ports of entry and one additional segment of the land border law enforcement area by 2024. And then 100% of selected ports of entry equipped with the biometric functionality by March 2024. And the last one really speaks to an automated biometric information system, or ABIS, implemented by 2022-23. Now, if we move to the next slide, Mr. Matonzi, the next slide basically speaks to the National Annual Strategic Plan and the intervention that we're making there, Chairperson, around ensuring that we have a secure border post through phased operationalization of the BMA. The indicator there is that we'll want to ensure that the BMA is fully established by the financial year 2023-24. And then the target, of course, is the incremental establishment of the BMA through the submission of pre-listing documents to National Treasury. And then the second one is the number of ports of entry with BMA rollout per year. And then BMA rolled out at 46 ports of entry by incorporating frontline immigration staff, port health, agriculture, and access control functions into the BMA. And I think we've done a lot of work in this specific area. The last one is really in terms of the indicators to ensure that the number of land border law enforcement area segments with BMA border guards. And then the target is to ensure that the BMA is incrementally rolled out in phases along three segments of the land border law enforcement area with regards to the border guards. If we move to the next slide, it's really the key considerations that I spoke about earlier on for the 2022-23 financial year, which covers essentially, Chairperson, the fourth year of the MTSF period. And I think here what's key is that in response, amongst others, to the COVID-19 pandemic, we had developed, it's something that we've shared with the portfolio committee, a scenario-based approach mainly to civic services targets since the 2020-21 financial year. I think based on lessons that we have learned in terms of how to manage the pandemic, we have now discontinued this scenario-based approach. You'll recall that in certain instances, in particular for civics, we had reduced the targets based on the scenario-based approach, and following advice both by the minister and the deputy minister, that scenario-based approach is discontinued for this financial year. The third area to consider is that at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, it did have a significant impact on the performance and operations of the DHA. The minister has spoken to us losing more than 40 employees and other activities. So it's important that as the DHA takes forward some of the lessons that we have learned, we need to be able to focus on the following. One, to ensure that we increase investment in technology, in particular the use of artificial intelligence, to make sure that we have an uninterrupted and also continue to provide quality services, to ensure that we implement the DHA service delivery and operating models as well as its access model strategy, and to ensure that we are ready for future pandemics so that we're able to have tools of trade that are able to empower staff to ensure that we continue to provide services. The fourth one is to ensure that the department timely and accurately communicates to ensure that people are aware about some of the initiatives. And the fifth one is to ensure that we continue provision of continuous oversight and management of staff and resources. And the last one is to ensure that we're fit for purpose infrastructure to accommodate safe and secure service delivery. You will know about the infrastructure build program that we are embarking on. I think the minister has spoken adequately towards the business case that we submitted to Treasury and the funding allocation that we have received. We should be able, Chairperson, to fill 762 posts. A lot of these have already been advertised. I think it started last month already. We advertised positions for the district managers. And then last week, there were office managers' positions, including those for immigration. And that's the split that's there, including the what the minister spoke about with regards to information services. And then this will assist us to deal with the severe human resource capacity constraints, which was really below 40%. And other developments which we'd like to highlight is that we're also working with other entities such as SACITA to look at the discretionary grant that we've received of more than 3 million for recruitment and placement of 50 interns in the DHA. And then, of course, the minister will speak to the appointment of the 10,000 youth for the digitization of records and modernization while we wait for Treasury to finalize that. The last point to make is that, of course, as Home Affairs, we remain cognizant of the increasing demands and expectations of the public to deliver quality services on a regular basis, in particular following the lifting of the national state of disaster. And I think we'll continue, Chairperson, in our endeavors to find durable, lasting solutions to challenges such as system downtime. We are working hard with the private sector to ensure that we stabilize our network and we look at the applications. And we believe that over the medium term, as the minister has said, we should be able to revert back to target performance levels prior to the commencement of the COVID-19 pandemic for key services such as early birth registration and the issuance of smart ID cards, as well as other enabling documents. On the next slide, it's other considerations that we have to look at. Amongst others, this will include national priorities, ministerial priorities, and departmental priorities. I think I've spoken to the contribution that we are making to the NDP, the APEX priorities, MTSF-related commitments. We've spoken to the National Annual Strategic Plan and those commitments. Key here, Chairperson, is our contribution as the country continues to recover, not only from the unrest in July, in terms of the economic reconstruction and recovery plans, what is our contribution there, and then the SONA commitments, and then, of course, the contribution to this pandemic or the other pandemic referred to as gender-based violence and femicide, and then the contribution to the district development model or the DDM. And then crucial, it's the redevelopment of 6 land ports of entry as one-stop border post. And the last one, of course, is the repositioning program, which looks at the 6 pillars of policy and legislation. I'm not going to go through all of them. If we can move to the next slide, which then provides a summary of the annual performance plan, the targets. And then the first one that we start with is really civic services. Some of those initiatives that the minister spoke about are aimed at increasing birth registration within 30 calendar days. This is why we're increasing the hospital, we're stabilizing the hospital connectivity network to make sure that we are able to register those births at those hospitals. Then the minister spoke about the 2.2 million smart card issued to citizens. And then we'll want to ensure that 90% of machine-readable adult passports are issued within 13 working days per year. And then similarly, child passports issued within 18 working days per year. The next one then looks at immigration services. The minister spoke about our increase in terms of ensuring that we deal with law enforcement operations. We're increasing those from 220 to 540. These are inspections that will be conducted for targeted areas, including activities such as not only roadblocks, but conducting inspections in your transport, your logistics, your hospitality, your mining, your constructions, your retail, your farms, and so on and so forth. And then the second one is really ensuring that 85% of permanent residence applications per year are adjudicated within 8 months of applications for those that are collected within the Republic of South Africa. and then 90% in order to ensure that business and general work visas are adjudicated within 8 weeks. And the last one is the 95% of critical skills adjudicated within 4 weeks for applications processed within the Republic of South Africa. The next one then looks at administration. In terms of administration, we focus on three key activities. I think if we can go back to the BMA. Mr. Matonzi, you're moving quite fast. I think on slide 14, the first one is really the incremental establishment of the BMA through the submission of pre-listing documents to National Treasury. Here, Chairperson, there's a number of activities that we need to do to make sure that before, as you know, that the BMA is currently incubated within the Department of Home Affairs, we need to make sure that all the policies related to finance, management and systems, all the policies with regards to HR management, all policies related to how we report on our budgeting. And of course, we need to make sure that the BMA has an account. So all those activities are currently unfolding. And this is the work that, amongst others, the project manager, Mr. Jean Ravere, is focusing on to make sure that by next year, 1st of April, the commissioner has indicated that the BMA will be a standalone entity. The second one is to make sure that the BMA is rolled out at 46 ports of entry by incorporating frontline immigration, including port health, which this committee is familiar with some of the challenges that we've had to face at the ports with regards to port health and then agriculture and access control functions. And then the next one is to ensure that the BMA is rolled out in phases along three segments of the land border law enforcement area. These are the deployment of the border guards, starting with the border between KZN and Lesotho, the Eastern Cape and Lesotho, Free State and Lesotho. And then we'll want to ensure that this committee visited a number of ports, including Lebombo in particular, where you found that ablution facilities were not functioning optimally. And the BMA, therefore, will seek to assume that responsibility for facility management at 31 land ports of entry to make sure that we take responsibility and accountability for facilities at the land ports of entry. And then at the end, we will want to make sure that financial and contractual closure reached with the bidders in respect of land development of six priority land ports of entry. That's with regards to the BMA. A lot of work, as the minister has indicated, is underway. With regards to the next slide that speaks to administration, Mr. Matonzi, on information services, we'll want to make sure that the biometric movement control system, or the BMCS, is implemented at 34 ports of entry. You'll recall that due to the disruptions as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, we were unable to take delivery of some of the equipment required for the BMCS. We've now taken a lot of delivery of this equipment. You'll also recall that there was a shortage globally of chips, or a chip that's required, and we've now taken delivery of some of this equipment. Secondly, we'll want to ensure that an enhanced e-visa released in production, and then the asylum seek and refugee system developed until live capture. And then during this financial year, we'll want to move and ramp up as we, once we've finalized phase one of ABIS, move towards phase two, which will include activities such as your iris recognition, infant footprint and palm print, back-end recognition capability functional. And then with regards to the DG's office, we'll want to ensure that the DHA bill is tabled in Parliament. And then, of course, the National Identification Registration Bill, which needs to be submitted to Cabinet for approval for public consultations. I think you'll recall that this committee has looked at your official identity management policy previously. Similarly, with the marriage policy, we'll want to make sure that this marriage policy is submitted to Cabinet for approval for public consultation. And then the one-stop border post bill also we'll want to submit to Cabinet for approval for public consultation. And then, of course, we need to enhance our work in the communication area. This is why we will be engaging in 20 media engagements, 6 outreach engagements, and 3 campaigns. With regards to institutional planning and support, we want to ensure that we finalize or the draft white paper on the management of citizenship International Migration and Refugee Protection. This we hope we'll be able to submit to Cabinet for approval. And then we'll want to ensure that the footprint development strategy is approved by the Minister in support of the phased implementation of the revised service delivery model. And lastly, of course, approval of the strategic accommodation requirements, which we need to submit to Public Works as part of implementing the DHA access model. If we move to the next key areas, counter-corruption and security services, we'll want to ensure that 4 business process evaluations are conducted and want to focus on late registration of birth, ID application, passport, and death registration. That's what counter-corruption wants to look at. And then 66% of reported cases of fraud and corruption finalized within 90 working days. So this is the work that counter-corruption wants to do as and when we ramp up activities or the fight against corruption. And then we'll want to make sure that there's 80 threat and risk assessments conducted in accordance with the requirements of the minimum information security standards, the MIS, and the minimum physical security standard, MPSS. And then we'll also want to make sure that we finalize 400 vetting files that are referred to SSA for evaluation. And then lastly, HR, management and development, will want to ensure that the DHA gender-based violence and femicide plan is implemented as per approved implementation plan. And working with counter-corruption, they'll want to ensure that all 60% of misconduct cases are concluded within 90 days. So the next slide, then, Chairperson, will deal with the targets per branch for this financial year. The first one. The first one looks at civic services. If we can move to slide 19. As the Minister has indicated, we want to make sure that in terms of the output indicator, we increase the number of births registered within 30 calendar days. You'll note the previous year's commitment. We're increasing that by 50,000. That takes it to 750,000, including in the outer years. And then below is a breakdown of what we will do per quarter. Quarter one, we'll want to make sure that there's 145,953,000 of those registrations taking place. In quarter two, that increases to 206,661,000. Quarter three, 194,891,000. And then quarter four, 202,495,000. So that's what we will do with regards to that. The second one speaks to the smart ID cards issued to citizens 16 years of age and above. The minister spoke about how we are ramping up that target from 1.6 to 2.2, and then below is the breakdown per quarter. Quarter one, 570,200,000. Quarter two, 550,000. Quarter three, 506,000. And quarter four, 570,200,000. So that's what we'll want to do with regards to that. And then the next one speaks to the passports, a percentage of machine-readable adult passports issued within 13 working days. We want to maintain the same percentage. The annual target is 90% for this financial year. And then per quarter, we'll want to keep the same momentum, producing at 90%. If we can move to the next slide, so the same one that will apply to machine-readable passports for children. The annual target, 90%, and then the breakdown per quarter, again, we'll want to maintain the same momentum at 90%. So the next targets will then deal with the immigration services, starting with the law enforcement operations. The number of law enforcement operations are inspected, conducted for targeted areas. As the Minister has indicated, 220 the previous financial year. This year, we're ramping that up to 540. And the breakdown per quarter is provided. Quarter one will want to do 135, quarter two, 135. Same with quarter three and quarter four. And the next slide then gives this committee an illustration of how we're planning to do that. At the top, it's activities that will be conducted by head office and the provinces in terms of inspections. And those are the sectors that will want to go to. It's the farms, it's the roadblocks, in terms of operations, transport, logistics companies. This committee will be familiar with some of the protests that we've seen on the highways where local drivers have alleged that there's a lot of foreign drivers employed. So we want to look into that space, manufacturing, wholesalers, hospitality, mining and construction. And then the provinces will also be making sure that they conduct those inspections and operations. And you will note that we'll be undertaking in all these operations in all the provinces, Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, Northern Cape, Western Cape, in a targeted approach. That's what we're intending to do. We thought it's important to share with the committee this slide. If we move to the next slide, it speaks to the percentage of permanent residence applications per year that needs to be adjudicated within 8 months for applications collected within the Republic. Last year, the estimated performance target was 85%. So this year, the annual target remains at 85%. And then for quarter one, if you look at the cycle in terms of how we approach this work, the cycle would have been from 16th of August until August 2022. Therefore, in quarter one, you wouldn't have had a population because some of those services were closed until January this year. Quarter two, we'll want to keep the momentum at 85%, quarter three, 85%, and then quarter four, 85%. If we move to the next slide, we'll speak to the business and general work visas per year adjudicated within 8 weeks. The annual target there is 90, and we'll want to keep the same momentum at 90% in all the quarters, quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, and quarter four. And then the next one speaks to critical skills, which is quite an important area to ensure that people that are coming into the country are the ones that are indicated in the critical skills list. If we can move to slide number 28, which speaks to that, the estimated performance last year was 85%. This year, we're ramping that up to 95%. And the breakdown will be for quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, quarter four. We want to keep the same momentum at 95%. Then the next slides will speak to areas under the Border Management Authority in terms of the targets. If we can move to slide 30, the output indicator, you'll know that it says BMA fully established by the financial year 2023-24. A lot of activities were undertaken last year. The minister has indicated the appointment of the commissioners. The BMA remains incubated. We're now working towards finalizing all those protocols. Some of them have already been finalized with SARS. Before the end of this week, the commissioner has indicated that they will be finalized one with the Defense Force. And then for this year in particular, the annual target is to make sure that the BMA is incrementally established through the submission of pre-listing documents to National Treasury. I've spoken to those documents already. If we move to slide 31, the next slide then speaks to what is it that we will be doing per quarter. For quarter one, we'll want to make sure that we fill all key management positions in corporate services and operations environment. Of course, that will include the work that we're doing around the border guards. But three critical positions will be that of a chief director responsible for border control, chief director responsible for national targeting center, chief director responsible for corporate support. And we'll want to ensure that the transfer of functions from departments of agriculture, land reform and rural development, health and SAPS to the BMA according to section 97 of the constitution. A lot of work has already been done in this specific area, which will include the identification and ring fencing of functions, personnel, budget, funds, assets and liabilities. In quarter two, we'll want to make sure that the BMA budget structure is submitted to Treasury. These are some of the requirements for the pre-listing that we need to undertake in quarter four. And then in quarter three, we'll want to make sure that these governance committees are established, audit, risk management, remuneration, and human resources. And then quarter four, it's those pre-listing documents, including those policies, which need to be submitted to Treasury so that by April, the BMA is an entity on its own. If we move to the next slide, it speaks to the number of ports of entry with BMA rollout per year. You'll recall that in the previous financial year, that was not applicable. This year in particular, we'll want to make sure that the BMA is rolled out at 46 ports of entry by incorporating frontline immigration, port health, agriculture, and access control functions into the BMA. And then at the bottom of that slide, the number of land, border law enforcement area segments with border guards per year. The previous year's performance is illustrated in terms of the rollout to five segments of the land border law enforcement. The critical ones here are the border between South Africa and Zimbabwe, and then Manguzi. So you've got the Manguzi, Skukuza, KZN and Eswatini, and then Mpumalanga and Eswatini. And then this year in particular, we want to roll out in phases along three segments. And these segments are KZN, the border between KZN, Lesotho, Eastern Cape, Lesotho, and then Lesotho, Free State and Lesotho. That's what we're planning to do. If we move to slide number 33, it speaks to the number of community crossing points within the BMA rolled out. We were able, this in the previous financial year by March, to roll out the one community crossing point in Sidila Molomo. So that target for this financial year is not applicable. And then in terms of assuming responsibility for facility management at land ports of entry, for the previous financial year, that was not applicable. This year in particular, we'll want to resume or assume responsibility for facilities management at 31 identified land ports of entry. If we can move to the next slide. The next slide then speaks to the number of ports of entry with BMA rollout per year. And then if you look at what we want to do in quarter one, we want to make sure that the port of entry rollout plans are approved by the commissioner. And then linked to that, it's important that we develop risk mitigation plans so that the commissioner has to look at and approve as well. Quarter two, we want to make sure that that rollout is done at 17 ports of entry. They are all listed there. And then in quarter three, we want to make sure that we then look at 14 of those ports of entry. In quarter four, we want to target the airports. All of them are listed on your extreme right. If we move to the next slide, slide 35 then speaks to the number of land border law enforcement area segments with border guards. And this year in particular, it's the BMA rolled out in phases along three segments of the land border law enforcement area. Quarter one, we spoke about the border between Free State and Lesotho. And then quarter two, it's the border between the Eastern Cape and Lesotho segment. And then quarter three, the border between KZN and Lesotho, and that's not applicable in quarter four. And then the target for the facilities management that we'll want to assume responsibility for in quarter one, we want to make sure that the process for the BMA to assume responsibility is concluded with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure in line with the Government Immovable Asset Management Act, or GIAMA. And then in quarter two, we want to make sure that the available facilities at the identified 31 ports of entry are audited so that we know what we're taking responsibility for. Quarter three, we want to ensure that those ramp contractors that they identified 31 ports of entry are appointed. And then in quarter four, we want to ensure that there's a facility management metrics which will include strategies, policies, budget, that needs to be approved by the BMA commissioner. And then the last target with regards to the BMA, we'll want to make sure that by the end of this financial year, the financial and contractual agreements are finalized or are reached with bidders in respect of the land development of six priority land ports of entry. Critical is to make sure that in quarter one, of course, we have submitted that all the documentation required to National Treasury. And then in quarter two, we had hoped that by now, I think the committee will be familiar with the challenges that Treasury is dealing with through the Concord decision. However, in quarter two, we hope that all those issues, once are resolved, we will then proceed. Once we have received the bids, we'll then evaluate. In quarter three, we'll want to make sure that contracts are negotiated with successful bidders. And we hope that by the end of the quarter four, we should have finalized the financial and contractual closure reached with those bidders with regards to the redevelopment of six priority land ports of entry. So that's crucial for us. Information services, that's the next area that we're looking at on slide number 38. The with regards to this performance for this financial year. I think I spoke about the number of selected ports of entry with biometric movement control system implemented. The annual target is to make sure that we get to the 34. Once we've done that, in quarter one, we make sure that the stabilization report that indicates the functionality of the BMCS, and that report needs to be signed off by DDG responsible for immigration to confirm readiness of environment for BMCS. And then the in quarter two, again, stabilization report, but in particular, the key element that we'll be looking at is the network upgrades for 15 ports that needs to be completed. And then in quarter three, we'll look at the BMCS implementation at 15 ports. And then in quarter four, BMCS implemented at 19 ports. That's with regards to IS. And the 34 ports that I spoke about are listed on slide number 39, the way the BMCS will be rolled out. If we move to the next slide, it speaks to the enhancement of e-visa as peer-approved change request. And I think the annual target is to ensure that an enhanced e-visa is released in production. Again, here, you'll recall that we rolled out this e-visa to 14 countries. The critical thing is to ensure that the system functions optimally. Quarter one is the change request for e-visa system enhancement. And in quarter two, enhancement in respect of approved change requests. Here we'll be testing the vulnerability of the system and then the testing. And then in quarter four, that's then released into production. And then on slide 41, it's really the asylum seeker and refugee system developed until life capture. That's what we'll want to do. And then with regards to AB subset, it's really to target and ensure that phase two then works optimally. If we move to the next slide, you'll then have the breakdown of these targets. With regards to the implementation of the asylum seeker and refugee system, in quarter one, we'll want to ensure that this functional design specification, which is approved by DDGIS, and then in quarter two, we'll need the progress of, report that's submitted to EXCO. And then in quarter three, the asylum seeker and refugee system needs to be developed. And then in quarter four, that needs to be developed into live capture for functionality. And similarly, with regards to ABIS, we'll want to make sure that by the end of quarter one, the draft front-end and back-end business requirements of gathering specification document is approved by DDGIS. And then in quarter two, the final front-end and back-end requirements gathering an interface architecture document needs to be approved both by IMS and Civic Services. And then in quarter three, those modules for IRIS, infant footprint, and palm print need to be developed into that APIS and live capture. And then in quarter four, functional testing and acceptance of the biometric modalities, both by the DDGs responsible for Civic Services and IMS. If we move to the next targets, these ones then speak to institutional planning and support. And slide number 44 is then the breakdown of those targets. The first one being the tabling of the Citizenship, Immigration and Refugees Bill in Parliament for processing of the bill. The annual target there is really the draft white paper on the management of citizenship, international migration and refugee protection that we'll want to submit to Cabinet for approval. If we move to the next slide, it's really the breakdown of how we'll want to attain this target. In quarter one, we'll want to make sure that the green paper is gazetted for public consultation, and we will be able to do this further by conducting 9 visual stakeholder workshops through the DHA stakeholder forums. And then in quarter two, we'll want to ensure that we host a national colloquium held with government and non-governmental representatives. And then we'll also want to make sure that the draft white paper is submitted to the minister for approval. And then, of course, we will need the final socio-economic impact analysis report, which is submitted to the DPME for approval. And then in quarter three, we'll want to take the white paper to the various government clusters, starting with the social cluster, ICTS cluster, the economic cluster, and JCPS clusters for approval and recommendation to cabinet. And then in quarter four, we'll want to make sure that the draft white paper is submitted to cabinet for approval. We move to the next slide. It's really the phased implementation of the revised service delivery model or SDM. The annual target for 2022-23 is the development or the footprint development strategy approved by the minister. And then the breakdown of the target is as follows. Quarter one, we'll want to make sure that the revised service delivery norms and standards are in line with the SDM, which is approved by the minister. In quarter two, we want to make sure that the revised footprint and model office design in support of the SDM is approved by the minister. And similarly, in quarter three, it's really the revised service delivery charter, which supports the SDM. And then quarter four, we hope the minister will then have approved the footprint development strategy. The next one then speaks to the SDM or the phased implementation of the DHA access model through the footprint optimization plan and the user asset management plan. And that's the annual target approval of the strategic accommodation requirements, which we need to submit to the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure as part of implementing the DHA access model. If we move to the next slide, you'll then have a breakdown of this target per quarter. Quarter one will want to make sure that the draft user asset management plan for this financial year is submitted to National Treasury for infrastructure budget determination. And then in quarter two, the final user asset management plan is then submitted to both Treasury and Public Works for infrastructure budget determination. And then in quarter three, that strategic accommodation requirement is then presented to EXCO. And in quarter four, we'll want to ensure that that strategic accommodation requirements is approved by the DG, including the strategic accommodation requirements, a document that we need to submit to Public Works and Infrastructure for them to conduct that feasibility assessment for the user asset management plan. Then the last one focuses on the DG's office in terms of the APP targets. It's really the tabling of the DHA bill in Parliament for processing. That's really the target for 2022-23. And then the breakdown in terms of that target. Quarter one, we'll want to make sure that the bill is gazetted for public comments. Quarter two, we'll want to submit that bill to the JCPS and GCIT cluster for approval and recommendation to Parliament. In quarter three, the DHA bill will then be submitted to cabinet for approval, and we hope that by quarter four, we'll then be able to table the bill in parliament for processing, which means this is work that's coming to this committee. And then the next one is ready to look at the tabling of the National Identification and Registration Bill in parliament for processing of the bill. That's the target for this financial year. We'll want to make sure that the National Identification and Registration Bill is submitted to cabinet for approval for public consultation. And then below, you then have the breakdown of how we will be able to achieve that. Quarter one, we'll want to ensure that the draft bill is submitted to EXCO for approval to recommend to minister. In quarter two, similarly, we'll want to take that report or bill submitted to minister, including the CS report, which needs to be submitted to DPME for approval. And then in quarter three, we'll want to share the bill with the various clusters, the GCIT or governance, and then economic sectors and employment, including infrastructure, and then the JCPS cluster for approval and recommendation to cabinet. And we hope that in quarter four, that draft bill will then be submitted to cabinet for approval for public publication, for public consultation. And then the next one then speaks to the marriage bill, the tabling of the marriage bill in parliament for processing of the bill. In the annual target is to make sure that the marriage bill is submitted to cabinet for approval for public consultation. And then what is it that we'll do per quarter? The draft bill will be submitted to EXCO for approval. In quarter two, we then need to submit it to minister, including the CS report. Quarter three is the consultations with the various clusters, GCIT, ECIT, JCPS, and then we hope that in quarter four, we will be able to submit the bill to cabinet for approval for public participation or consultation. That's on the marriage bill. On the OSBP bill, we'll want to make sure that this year, that bill is submitted to Cabinet for approval for public consultation. And then in quarter one, that bill will be submitted to EXCO for approval to recommend to Minister. And then in quarter two, that bill is then submitted to Minister for approval, including the CS report. And similarly, as with the other bills, it needs to go to the various clusters. It will go to the GCIT, Economic Cluster, JCPS for approval and recommendation. And hope that by the end of quarter four, that bill will have been submitted to Cabinet for approval for public participation or consultation. The next one then deals with how we enhance our communication. The annual target is to ensure that the Home Affairs communication strategy and plan is implemented. We'll want to ensure that there's 20 media engagements, 6 outreach engagements, and 3 campaigns. Per quarter, we'll want to undertake 5 media engagements, 2 outreach engagements, and 1 campaign. So that will be for quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, and quarter four. And then the next slide then speaks to HR, almost at the end of the presentation. And HR is really the DHA gender-based violence and femicide plan. And then for all the quarters, we'll want to make sure that this important work, we then ensure there's an implementation implemented per quarter. If we can move to the next one. It's really the percentage of misconducted cases. I've spoken to this one. It's a new performance indicator. The annual target will want to make sure that we start at 60%, ramp up to 80% the following year, and 95%. So per quarter, we'll keep it at 60%. And the next one speaks to counter corruption. I think I've spoken to some of the activities. I'll move with speed. The annual target for ensuring that the number of DHA business processes are evaluated to identify possible vulnerabilities to fraud, corruption, and security breaches. We've set the target is 4, and then the activities that will be done per quarter are listed below. The first one we've spoken about, late registration, second quarter ID application, third quarter passport application, and death registration. So that's what counter corruption will do. And then the next one speaks to reported cases. That target has also been ramped up as we deal with issues of fraud and corruption. Last year, we were sitting at 50%. This year, we're increasing that to 60%. And then the quarterly breakdown is then provided as well. And then the next one speaks to the number of threat and risk assessments. We've increased that as well from 40 to 80. And then per quarter, we'll want to do 20 of those assessments. If we can move to the next slide. The number of vetting files, we've increased that from 300 to 400. And then per quarter, we'll want to ensure that at least 100 of those files are submitted to SSA for evaluation. So the last slides then deal with the budget in terms of the allocation letter that we've received from Treasury, the summary, the allocation for Program 1, Administration, Civic Services, Immigration, and Institutional Support and Transfers. So if you look at slide number 64, broadly, it speaks to our allocation of 9.4 billion. That then goes down. Thanks, Mr. Matonzi. It goes down in this financial year. You'll need to look at the first column. The allocation is the 9.4 billion. And then for the next financial year, it goes down to 9.3. And then it increases by 400 to 9.7 billion in the 2024-25 financial year. But the focus should be on the 2022-23 financial year. And then you can see the increases are mainly for the BMA. They get an increase of 25 million and the compensation of employees. And then the DHA capacitation, the minister has spoken about that. That starts at 266 million. Increases in the next financial year to 278 million and then 24-25 to 291 million. And then the others, it's mainly for goods and services. And then, of course, there's an increase in terms of the political parties fund with 171 million and then 178-186. And then the reductions, of course, will always be there. So if you look at what's crucial on this slide, it's really the 2022 MTF allocation, the budget that I spoke about earlier on in terms of the estimate of national expenditure, 9.4 billion, that's the budget. And then If you look at the other activities below us, really the allocations that have been effected. Let's then move to the next slide, then provide the summary of what is it that we have been allocated per branch. That's the summary. Administration, if you look at 2022-23, the entire budget is upset. It's 9.4, administration 2.6, citizen affairs 2.5 billion, immigration affairs 1.4 billion, and then the new program, institutional support and transfers. This is mainly to transfer the funding that's allocated, sits at 2.7 billion. And then there's the economic classification. You'll note that the compensation of employees still takes quite a large chunk of the budget, given the fact that our work is mainly driven by personnel, 3.8 billion. That's split into salaries and goods and services. If you move to the next slide, it then speaks to the allocation for program one. The allocation for program one will include the sub-programs, ministry, management support services, corporate services, and then of course IT and office accommodation, which still takes about 465 million. So there we go, administration 2.6 billion. I think I am ahead of you.
Okay. Which slide are you in?
I am on, I was on the previous one. You are now on immigration. You're now ahead of me. If you can go back to civic services, the allocation is, yes. No, no, not that one. Next one. Next one. Yeah, civic services, if you look at, Mr. Matonzi, go back. The allocation for civic services, those are the sub-programs, citizen affairs management. If you look at 2022-23, status services, identification services, and then the allocation for the provinces. So that sits at 2.5 billion, and then the economic classification as to what the allocation is for. We can move to the next slide, Mr. Matonzi, that looks at immigration services, and the sub-programs are listed: immigration affairs management, admission services, immigration services, asylum seekers, and that's the breakdown of the budget, 1.4 billion, and then there's the economic classification. What is it that they are allocated the funding for? And then institutional support and transfers. I think of interesting to note on this slide, if we can move to the next one, Mr. Matonzi, is the allocation, a very substantial increase that is being made to the BMA, which really gives us a sense of comfort. If you look at what the BMA was allocated in the 2018-19 financial year, they started on a very modest budget of 6 million, increasing or decreasing to 4, then 2021-19. And then 2021-22, 46, then there's a huge jump. If you look at 2022-23, they're now sitting at 196,717. Of course, it goes down the next financial year and the other financial year. And for sure, Treasury will be sympathetic to this area of work. And then the Electoral Commission, of course, that's the normal standard transfer of 2.2 billion. And then the political parties fund 342 million. And then they break down in terms of the various economic classifications. So that translates to 2.7 billion. So this last slide is really to request the portfolio committee to support the annual performance plan of the Department of Home Affairs for 2022-23 financial year. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DDG. Sorry, DG, for a detailed presentation. We're going to request members to comment or raise questions. And I think one of the areas which DG perhaps may need to reflect more is the budget allocation of BMA. I see in the next financial year, it's going to decline. Perhaps the metrics on how and why that allocation will it decline, given that this is a new institution and with the responsibilities that have been outlined. If you can perhaps all the commissioner deal with that. I'm going to invite the Honorable Lukwase, Honorable Ross, Honorable Tito, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Van der Merwe, Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Ramolobeng, and Honorable Pillay to make the comment. And then I will then invite the Director General in the responses. I know you have DTGs. If you need to delegate, then we'll invite the DM and then the minister. Then we're able to close on this item. In that order, Honorable Kwase.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me thank Mr. Makode for the presentation and also follow cue from your opening, Chairperson, to say that we really wish well to Mr. McKay for the hard work and the dedication that he showed throughout his years in serving our communities with the Department of Home Affairs. And also say that we thank him very much for his cooperation with the portfolio committee since we got into office in the sixth administration. And also thank Mr. Mashinini for his contribution with the work of IEC. Chairperson, let me first start with the BMA. One, I would like to request that we as the portfolio committee get a briefing on the progress that is made in the BMA. The briefing can take place either quarterly. We will agree whether we get briefings on the implementation of the BMA, whether quarterly or mid-yearly. And then my other request to the department would be that we are given a feedback or, let me say, progress that is made concerning or with the phase one implementation of the ADIS. Because previously, Chair, we note that there was a problem with the then service provider and the department was to hire a new service provider in completing this phase of ABIS. The third issue that I would like to raise, Chair, I see there's an increment from 2021 financial year with the rollout of the biometric systems. One would want to know what informs the increment from 24 ports of entry to 34 ports of entry. My interest would be that the department shares the successes of the implementation, whether it's the ones that made them to increase the rollout to 34 ports of entry. If not the successes, what were the challenges that they came across in the implementation? One last issue, Chair, would be that I have an interest in knowing whether there are businesses that are found guilty in employing the undocumented persons in their businesses, and also the cooperation or the working together between the Department of Home Affairs and the Department of Labor in issues of employment of undocumented people. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much for your contribution, Honorable Kwase. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. So from my side as well, wishing Mr. McKay all the very best in his golden years, and I hope that it wasn't his spell as acting DG that that finished him off. But I'll never forget, you know, in the darkest days of lockdown, being able to phone Mr. McKay on a Sunday morning when there was an emergency at some port, and it was almost never that I didn't find that he answered his phone, or that he didn't phone back almost immediately. And really, thank you very much, Mr. McKay, for the support in that time. And I really wish you all the very best in your retirement years. Chairperson, first of all, the minister was speaking about staff, and I've raised this before, but I'm just struggling to understand this aspect of so-called shortage of staff. And Chairperson, if you go to the annual report, and let's look before COVID, 2018-2019, there were 9,025 staff. So 10 years before, there were 7,440. So in that 10-year time period, the department had had increased their staff complement with 1,500 people. And these were all in level 6 to 8. But in the same time period, Chairperson, the number of IDs, passports, and birth registrations actually went down. So you had 20% more staff at a level that would be serving at an office, but the output of the staff was less. And so I'm just trying to understand, and perhaps I don't know if the DG can give me this answer, but if we, in that 10-year time period before COVID, if you added 20% more staff, how can it be that they are producing less before COVID? And what is being done to increase that productivity? Is it a concern for the DG? Is it something that the department is looking at? Because we can say we need more staff until we blew in the face. But if we are adding more staff and the productivity stays the same, then there is a problem that you need to address. And so I'd like an answer on that, Chairperson, please, just to understand that productivity question mark that is going on there. Then, Chairperson, the report talks about Home Affairs' contribution to the apex priorities of government. And, you know, we have a very special day tomorrow. And really, if you look at Home Affairs, one of their key contributions is the inclusion of all citizens in democracy and development by providing them with a status and an identity that gives them access to rights and services. And it says that this must be done in an efficient, effective, professional, and secure manner. But Chairperson, we look at a situation where you look at a budget and it tells you where the priorities are. And it says that we prioritize the compensation of earnings, so all these salaries that are paid to the staff, whether there's too many or too few. The concern that I have, Chairperson, is that we talk about now, you know, we're going to hire 10,000 young people and they're going to scan 30 million documents over 3 years. If you work that out, Chairperson, it works out to 3 documents per day. So all of these young people are going to come in and scan 3 documents a day. And that is going to be the solution. But Chairperson, we have just under 500,000 South African learners in schools who are undocumented. These are people on the Lurita system who are recognized as South African children who are undocumented. So this means that they've missed the birth registration of places of birth. And I can tell you, Chairperson, I went a few weeks ago to register the birth of my daughter at the health facility. And when I registered my son, I got a printout there and then. When I registered my daughter, I had to come back 2 weeks later. And when I came back to fetch that document, I'd commented on that. And they pointed around the corner of the door, and there was the computer in the printer sitting there. So somehow this is going backwards, Chairperson. And my concern here is we haven't heard anything here about the offices opening on Saturdays. And I know that the minister has said that there is a dispute with the unions, etc. But Chairperson, this has been 2 years now. This has been more than 2 years that we've raised this issue of Home Affairs offices not opening on Saturdays. And so I get constant phone calls of learners who cannot now go and get their documentation. I have to tell them, go in your school uniform to a Home Affairs office and you will hopefully be put to the front of the queue. And so I think the question here, Chairperson, is what is going to be done about the 500,000? I understand there's 10,000 youth. Those 500,000 that are coming, that are in the school system at any one time, that are undocumented, they are not going to be able to apply for those jobs. And what is the plan of the minister to deal with that? Because we are not seeing more mobile units. So we are seeing some mobile units. We are seeing the birth registration of places of birth. It's not going forward. There's still a connectivity problem. And the offices are not opening on Saturdays. So what is the plan to address this youth crisis that we have, where these young people are completely locked out of opportunities? And then my final point, Chairperson, is on this the immigration issue. And Chairperson, you know, we had an oversight about 2 weeks ago in Johannesburg, and I was being told by the head of immigration about how they have weekly operations, et cetera, all over the place. And I said, you know, how can it be that if you were having these operations, why would you have civil society organizations that saw a gap and decided to have those operations? And it just doesn't add up to me, Chairperson, because, you know, you look at the beginning of this report, And it talks about continuing with the implementation of a risk-based approach to immigration. But I'd like more of an explanation of what is this risk-based approach. Because if we look at slide 25, and you look at all the different provinces, all of them have 33 operations, except for Gauteng, which has 36. So surely that doesn't make sense. Chairperson, if you're saying that Gauteng should have 36 operations and other provinces have 33, they have the same number, then I don't see where this risk-based approach is going from. I mean, you don't hear about massive xenophobic outbreaks in the Northern Cape, for example. So I'd really like to understand, Chairperson, how can this risk be the same? And how do you work out now going to these different places? I understand the issue of truck drivers and the tensions that are going on there. But Chairperson, it's been almost 2 years now where we had COGTA, we had the minister, we had mayors of metropolitan municipalities. And it seems like we are still not getting this picture that the main risks of xenophobia and xenophobic attacks are going on in our metropolitan municipalities. And so I'd like an explanation of what is this risk-based approach, because we don't see it in that slide 25. We just see it's a general thing. So if we're being told that the same number of immigration officials are in each province and they do the same number of immigration activities, then something is clearly wrong there, Chairperson.
Okay.
Final question, Chair, is I don't understand how we go from 220. So again, even if we look back a few years, it was about 240. You were about 60 per quarter of these immigration inspections. How is it that we are now able to more than double that all of a sudden? What changed? Did we get double the staff? Why were we not doing 540 before? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ruas, for your contributions and comments. Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson, and I greet everyone who is present today. Chair, I just want to make a comment on Mr. Motsoaledi said earlier on about the staff. I welcome the presentation that he made that we must have more staff, because of I went for an oversight in Mpumalanga, in Secunda and Betal. Chair, it was a mess there. Long queues were all over. And then when I asked the staff there, they were complaining about that they are not enough. One staff member, one official is doing a job of three people. So I think that also the officials of Home Affairs, they must also go to the ground and see what is happening. And maybe they are not channeling the staff to the right offices. Like Honorable Ross was saying that we have staff, but now the work is not being done. Let us check and go to the ground on what is really happening. And also on the issues of hospitals. Right now, Evander Hospital in Secunda and also in Betal, they don't have Home Affairs officers who are issuing birth certificates. And also that one is also a bad luck, because of now most of the mothers, when they went out of the hospitals, they don't have birth certificates for the kids, and then they are going to wait at home. You know, us, especially in our African cultures, we are just going to go home and wait maybe for more than 6 months and a year, and then we want to go to Home Affairs offices and register our kids for birth certificate. And it's going to be a problem, because of now most of them, they must go for interviews, and then it's a lot. So let us also go and channel and see what is happening on the ground, and especially on the hospitals. And most of the staff members, they are complaining that they are not enough. One person is doing a job of three people, capturing, also checking and everything. So please let us also go to the ground and not only sit there on the top and then see that no, things are functioning, but things are not functioning on the ground. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tito, for your contributions. Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to everyone that is present in this meeting. Chairperson, I also would like to express my appreciation of the work that has been done by Mr. Jackson McKay. we have had a lot of successes. We have had a lot of cases where that were resolved speedily, that one wouldn't have expected. I just want to highlight one incident. I'm not sure if Mr. McKay still remember during the COVID outbreak. I think we're still on a hard lockdown. There was a case of an 8-month-old child that was born in Zimbabwe, and she was supposed to come to the site for a heart operation. I spoke with Mr. McKay together with Mr. Matthews. Apparently, they wanted to make arrangements for the flight to be able to land at this site. We all worked actually throughout the night because I received a call around 10 at night. And the following day, at around 7 in the morning, the child was in the hospital already. Mr. McKay, we truly appreciate all the contributions we have had, and we're wishing you everything of the best. Coming to the presentation, Chairperson, we welcome the presentation. However, I just have a few questions. I want to draw your attention to slide, I think it's slide number 9, number 6A. It says the Department of Home Affairs is cognizant of the increasing demands and expectations of the public to deliver quality services on a regular basis, especially after the lifting of the national state of disaster on the 5th of April 2022. The Department of Home Affairs will continue in its endeavors to find durable solutions for long-lasting systemic challenges such as system downtime. If my memory serves me very well, I think last year around June and July, the Department of Home Affairs appeared before this portfolio committee and told us that they are going to upgrade their system. What I would like to know is the progress that has been done in terms of upgrading the systems in the Department of
Honorable Kanyile, we are losing you on the point you are raising.
Because we have idle spring and of downtime that is affecting the service in various. Chairperson?
Yeah, we're losing you. We lost you on some of the issues we're raising. I don't think they've captured them.
Oh, I'm so sorry for that.
But yeah, now you're audible. Just if you can just recap so that they capture your notes.
Okay, I said I was reading on slide 9, number 6, where the department, they are talking about the issues of system downtime. My question is that last year, I think between June or July, if my memory serves me well, we had a presentation by the Department of Home Affairs where they indicated that they are going to upgrade their system. What I'd like to know is that how far have they gone with that exercise and if it's yielding any positive results? Because there's an oversight that I have conducted in Nigel Springs and Harrison Street offices. Though in those branches, most of the issues that are being highlighted is the issue of the broadband that is always offline. And if we all remember, think about 2 weeks ago, it was on a Friday. There was a day where the system was down like nationally. So Home Affairs was not able to work. And these things, what they normally do, they put the workers' lives at risk as well, because members of the community, they do not understand that the staff in that office does not have anything to do with the system downtime. They end up attacking them, and some of the officials have advised that they've told us that they have been assisted by the member of SAPS on a number of times. So what I would like to know is that what is the status of the systems upgrade from the day of the presentation that was done in June or July last year up to date? The second question that I am having is with regard to the gender-based violence and femicide awareness. I think the department has indicated that they have had about 13 awareness sessions conducted. What I'd like to know is that do they conduct these awareness sessions with the members of the public, or these are the sessions that are conducted internally within the department? The next question that I have, in connection with what the minister said during his opening. He's mentioned something about the tip-offs, and he's also mentioned something about Operation Ugai Mulao, which I believe that it is a step in the right direction. because recently there is an individual that was arrested for running an unofficial office of Home Affairs in his Hillbrow flat. What I'd like to know is whether the department has done any investigations to ascertain if this individual does not have other branches in each and every province. Because if we can all remember all the services that this man was providing, other services that I needed nationally. Another question that I am having is with regards to, I'm just taking my chances with this one, it is with regards to the Home Affairs building where the DG, the DDGs normally sit. When we conducted, when we went for an oversight, Chairperson, I think you will remember in 2019, immediately after the elections, we were told that these offices, they were going to be moved, but I'm not sure to which location, because when we were there, we could not ignore the noise of the taxis, because that building is next to a taxi rank. And the same thing happens over and over and over again. If there is a presentation that is made by the DG or one of the DDGs, you just cannot ignore the noise by the taxis there at the back. But I'm not sure if this is the question that the department is going to answer today, or they're going to come back and give us another detailed presentation, because we have also been getting concerns about the number of Home Affairs offices which building have dilapidated and others are leaking now that we had this rain. So I'm really not sure. I think the department is going to guide us on this one. My last question, Chairperson, it is with regards to the opening of offices over the weekend. When I conducted an oversight, I think in Nigel or Spring, I was advised that during the school holidays, the staff was working up to 6 o'clock. So basically they were working overtime, but I'm not sure if they were being paid for that overtime or they were being compensated for the hours that they have worked. What I'd like to know is that can't they use the same system to be able to open on Saturdays to accommodate the people that are not able to access the offices during the week, like the scholars, or people that are working that are not able to get some time off. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile, for your contributions. Honorable Fanar Merve.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And may I also just firstly greet the Minister, the Deputy Minister, our DG, and then also just add my voice to our colleagues, to wish the Honorable McKay well in his retirement and to thank him for his service. I would like to concur, Chairperson, with the comments that was made by the Honourable Lekhoase in terms of the need for us as a committee to get a regular briefing or a quarterly briefing on the progress and budget of the BMA. I've been covered on the question with regards to the GBV programs from Honourable Kanyile, because I was also interested to know whether these are public outreach programs or for the staff. I assume it's for the staff, but if we can get more information there. Then on the issues of the war on queues and the embarrassing long, system downtime, and of course the issue of queues, the Minister did touch on that in his introduction. But I wanted to maybe just ask with regards to our targets for 2022 and 2023, what are the planned targets in terms of the rollout of services to banks? If the DG can just give me an indication. On the issue of corruption, I think it's good to know, as the Minister said, that the anti-corruption unit will be beefed up. And I also look forward to getting a presentation in that regard. But I want to focus, and it has been touched on by our other colleagues, but I really want to focus on the issue of the immigration crisis in our country. And the Minister rightly said that the issue has dominated the media space. I think there's wide consensus amongst South Africans now that we do face an immigration crisis. But the question then becomes, how are we going to fix it? And I'm not talking here about the BMA or the rollout of the BMA. The reality is that currently tensions are rising in communities, and rightly so, because they have been saying for many, many years that the Department of Home Affairs are failing to implement its own immigration laws. So I want to thank the Minister and the DG for being on the ground. I have seen them visiting Beitbridge, and the Minister is being lauded by South Africans for doing work in this regard. But my question becomes, surely, and I've raised this on numerous occasions, but the solution to fixing our immigration crisis cannot be the 220 operations alone, or even now the aim to go to 540 operations. It must be welcomed. But I think we need to first ascertain what the 220 operations resulted in. In other words, if we say we've conducted 220 operations, how many illegal migrants were identified and apprehended? How many were deported during the last financial year? And how much did we spend on deportations? And Honorable Lukwasi did mention it, but with regards to the operations that are being conducted in conjunction with other departments, for example, how many businesses were identified that were employing undocumented and or illegal migrants? And what did that result in? In other words, how many of these businesses were fined? Because I think, you know, it's counterproductive to say now we're moving from 220 operations to 540 if we're not sure that these current operations are yielding the results that we are requiring to fix our broken immigration system. Because, for example, you know, if you look at the current issues around Operation Dudula, the issues in Deep Sluit, the issues of the syndicates that are being identified, it looks like we are losing the war against illegal migration. So I want to also know, in terms of the syndicate that has now been identified that we're reproducing the passports and the IDs, we've got the task team that reviewed all visas that was established last year by the minister, and we are expecting a report back on that. But now, if there's a situation where mass amounts of passports were being reproduced by syndicates, and we don't even know if this is the only syndicate, will the department consider launching a review of all passports? Because quite clearly, we now sit with a situation where people are in possession of documents that they are utilizing, and they are fake. So I wanted to know what the minister's view is on that. And then if you look at the budget, there will be a slight decrease in terms of our spend on immigration affairs. And I'm also thinking, what happens if we do, say, for example, these 540 operations result in us identifying maybe 100,000 illegal migrants? What happens next? Because the department doesn't have the money for deportations. So in other words, I guess what I'm asking is, what is the holistic plan in the absence of a fully functioning BMA to deal with the current crisis that is the immigration crisis in South Africa? In other words, it can't just be the 540 inspections. Do we have, for example, I did an oversight recently where I encountered two immigration officials in Gauteng outside of a Home Affairs office. They told me that if they come to work, it's neither here nor there because they do not have a manager. They make up their own program. In other words, nobody tells them what to do. They report to one another when they want to take leave. And basically, they do not have that. They're only two officials. They do not have the support that they need. So even if they do identify people, for example, printing residency permits or engaging in illegal activities, they do not have the support to actually do the job that is required of them. So all is not well in terms of the immigration affairs. And I just think that, you know, as much as we laud you for wanting to increase your operations to 540, we need to start thinking out of the box in terms of a holistic plan to deal with our immigration crisis and easing tensions in our community. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks very much, Honorable Fanor Merve, for your contributions. Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation as presented by the department and acknowledge the progress in most of the programs that are being performed well. And where the department is not performed well as a result of COVID-19, we hope that there is a plan in place to fast-track those programs. Chairperson, I think most of the issues are covered by members, especially important issues that have been raised by honorable members that spoke before me. But Chairperson, I just want to propose to the department that in their future plan, the Moretele should be considered for Home Affairs offices. As we speak currently, they are relying on mobile units or they have to travel to Temba, and those who live in the northern part of Moretele, they will travel to Wombat and also Brad. So it's very difficult for the old age people to travel such long distances. So I want to propose that in the future plan department should consider the office in that municipality. But otherwise, Chairperson, I would therefore wish to note and welcome the report as been presented. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mkwini? Honorable Ramolobe? Honorable Pile?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me just say that we must also applaud improvements and progress, and I think it's important to give credit where it's due. But also, we must be able to look at shortcomings and how we can be able to better improve our systems, particularly because we are providing a service to citizens. Chair, I just want to say that for me, I'm a bit concerned that we are not able to draw a comparison in terms of the annual reports. If you look at the 2020-2021 financial year, we're only going to receive, the 2021-2022 financial year, we're only going to receive that report in September 2022. That would have already been midterm in this financial year. And in terms of, a budget cycle and planning, it's important for us to be able to review at least in the first quarter so that you budget accordingly for the next year and look at how we improve. And the comparison we're drawing here is from 2019, 2020, and then you go back as far as 2015, 2016. And I think it makes it difficult to be able to see the improvement. We all know that in the last, 2 years, there was challenges around COVID, but I think it's important for us to be able to start picking up the pieces and working strongly towards improving it. I would have hoped to have seen the booking system in terms of a rollout. I know we've piloted and we're going to be receiving a report and update, but I think that, and I'm saying this because I know I've heard success stories of how the booking system is working so well, and I would have thought that perhaps you would have seen a rollout plan in this financial year, because that's really going to assist us. Secondly, modernization of offices. I can't stress how important it is for us to be able to improve and to, I think, we deserve to have all our citizens across the length and breadth of this country service the same. So there shouldn't be some areas with modern offices and others that are not. The third one is on mobile trucks, as we've seen how it's been assisting and benefiting our communities. And then the last one is just on the social cohesion, just to be able to understand what are the specifics and if you unpack what it is that we're doing around social cohesion. Otherwise, I'm comfortable with that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thanks, members, and thanks, Honorable Pile, for your contributions and comments and questions to the raised to the presentations. I'm going to request that we request the DG to respond. You will then delegate to the DDGs, I know, but because of time, we need to make sure that we don't take long in the responses, in particular the DDGs. Then we'll invite the DM to respond and make comments, and we'll invite the minister to make comment. In the DG's responses, you'll also invite the commissioner of the BMA to make comment and response. Then we'll work towards closing on the item and get into the briefing on the flat, and then we're able to close the meeting and allow members to go to the to their house. The item, and then I'll invite the DG.
No, thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you to the honorable members for the questions. Let me get straight into it. The commissioner for the PMA will then respond to issues that have been raised around the funding for the PMA. But just for the committee to note that you'll recall that we've been allocated 120 million for the PMA, which we then subsequently wrote to Treasury to ask for reprioritization of that funding so that we then start with the capacitation, which we have started with the adverts for the border guards. So that's part of the process in terms of the budget. Obviously, Treasury will want to monitor how we're spending that allocation that's been granted before further funds are probably allocated. But BMA Commissioner will speak to that. Honorable Lukwase, definitely, I think we through the minister, we should be able to brief the committee. I think the minister will make the determination whether it's quarterly or mid-year, but we wouldn't want a situation where there's a lot of activities happening and the committee is left behind. I can briefly indicate that in the shortest space of time, we have had about two IMCs comprising of ministers that are responsible in one way or the other are linked to the PMA. Those meetings have been happening. Previously, those meetings have not happened. Similarly, with the DGs that are responsible in terms of the technical committees. So those IMCs have really given us impetus in terms of the work of the PMA, which we can brief the committee. On the BMCS, I think you will recall, Honorable Lukwase, when we were here last year, we had indicated when we provided the annual report that due to disruptions in the global supply chain processes, we were not able to secure certain equipment to enable us to finalize the BMCS. We have now received that, which is why we now have a rollout for that equipment to all those areas. And then in terms of joint operations with the labor, I think that's work that is ongoing. You'll also recall that Minister Motsoaledi, together with Minister Ngesi, are also joint chairs of the IMC that's looking at immigration matters. For sure, the minister can elaborate. Honorable Ruos, in terms of your numbers that you have given us with regards to our capacitation, I think your numbers do not take into consideration the following. One, the natural attrition process, where people retire, where people die, or where people leave for any other activities. If you recall, if you have gone through the annual report would have shown you that in 2018, 477 people left the department for various reasons. 2019, 204 people left the department for various reasons. 2021, about 168. And just this financial year, civics alone lost 181. And I'm giving you figures just for civics. So that will probably, if you use basic arithmetic, that will take you to 1,030. And if we were to look at immigration, we'll probably come to the same numbers. So the numbers are not static. And people move for one way or the other. And therefore, this capacitation was therefore necessitated and informed by data in our position to look at how do we then capacitate the department. This committee, I think Honorable Ross yourself, you requested us to come to this committee and present the capacitation or the business plan or business case that we've made to Treasury. We're still waiting for an invite from the committee so that we'll be able to share with you what we have lost, what we have gained, and how we are moving forward. With regards to undocumented learners, I think we'll really appreciate if we can get a list of those learners that you are referring to. We do have a very active program led by the Deputy Minister that goes to schools to ensure that learners are able to apply for identity documents. And then on the issue of working on Saturdays, you will recall that we also have a program that's linked to the school calendar where we operate on extended hours. So we've just concluded, and Honorable Kanyile, you just confirmed in your input, we just concluded that exercise 2 weeks ago where we open our offices up to 1900 hours. And we are, of course, considerate of the fact that while those discussions with labor are ongoing, we should not stop. So we have been active, we've been doing that, and the school visitation program is on. I think on the mobiles, in response to your question, including the question that's being asked by Honorable Pile, the minister directed last year that we procure 10 of those mobiles. Those mobiles have been bought, have been branded, and are currently going through an installation phase with regards to the necessary equipment. And this financial year in particular, we will add an additional 15 with regards to that. And then maybe as a parting shot, DDG McKay, you'll respond to the issues around the risk-based approach with regards to how we're managing immigration. But just to indicate as well, Honorable Van der Merwe, that you know the issue around immigration, there's a global immigration crisis, not only in South Africa. If you were to go to Poland today, the Polish people are fighting the Germans that are going through to their country. If you go to the UK, similarly, and we're not saying we need to shun whatever that's happening there, but we learn from how others are managing some of those issues with a view to finding solutions that are based in terms of our own continent and the region. And then maybe just briefly on the questions raised by Honorable Tito, I think we do visit offices time and again. Just last week, I was in White River. I visited two offices. DDG Sikama went to the other. So we always split. We always on the ground visiting. So we are familiar with the capacity of each and every office in the country. So that's what we are familiar with. And I think, again, your questions is related to the capacitation that I've spoken to. I think, Honorable Kanyele, I think I've spoken to the issues around how we try and mitigate the demand for services by ensuring that it's linked not only to some of the school calendars. How we've upgraded the systems, we've started that work. Working, of course, with the private sector, including the activities that we're doing around upgrading the network, the purchase of the switches, the routers, that's work that we're doing with CETA, including the issues that you've raised with regards to us being offline. I suppose on the broadband, the offline activities that you've referred to, you'll recall that specifically on that Friday, the whole country was experiencing load shedding, and certain of our generators could not kick in, but also some of the sites that provide services to us through CETA were down, which led to a huge network that experienced challenges. I think, I suppose, on the issues of the building, we are in the process. We have registered the new building through a PPP with the National Treasury. The identified site is in Salvokop. That's where the new head office, and there's a process that Mr. Ngasana will speak to in terms of that. And then maybe just the last one, I think Minister will speak to issues around the ministerial committee. I think if we do get some of the details around areas that you have referred to, Honorable Van der Merwe, with regards to immigration, for sure it's a matter we can attend to. But we are capacitating immigration, as the minister has said. We are capacitating civics. If you look at some of the data that we have over a period of time, those areas were not fully capacitated. We have actually advertised, including for office managers, where you have been, there was no office manager. We have actually advertised for those positions, and we are in the process of filling those vacancies. And we hope that will then assist us to deal with the issues such as the war on queues, including Honorable Pile, the appointment system. DDG Mavuso can add to that. We piloted at 24 offices, and we have been receiving quite good feedback in terms of how we need to roll it out to the other areas. So, Honorable Chair, maybe let's start by allowing Commissioner Masiapato to respond to BMA issues, and then DDG Sikama, DDG Mavuso, DDG McKay can then respond to some of those issues. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. In that order, Commissioner Masiapato.
No, thanks, DG, and thanks, Honorable Chair and the committee members, Minister DM. Maybe just on the basis of time, Honorable Chair and committee members, I wouldn't necessarily go into trying to update yourself in terms of where we are today in our journey towards operationalizing VMA. Suffice to say, as suggested by Honorable Lohwase, as well as affirmed by Honorable Van der Merwe, that we be able to come exclusively to deal with those issues in a quarterly basis or so. We shall definitely be coming through to talk in details in terms of where we are in as far as that is concerned. But for now, I just want to then respond only to the question raised by the chair around the budgetary issues. You will note, Honorable Chair, as you have seen on slide number 69, where it shows that in the current financial year, we are sitting at around 196 million or so. As the DG had indicated, there has been that move by National Treasury in giving us the 120 million so that we can be able to do over and above the integration process, but do the capacitation on the sideline. And that is the work that we are currently doing within the context of the appointment of the border guards. As I speak now, just next door to my office, the colleagues are actually busy with the interview process of the senior as well as the chief border guard. But why then does it look like in the next financial year the amount is going down? So that is just on the basis of what is on slide number 69. But what it means is, honorable members, one, you will remember that as we do this work, we are supposed to be doing the integration of the five areas of work within the port of entry in particular. So in doing that work, you'll remember we have to do the following activities. Number one, we have to get the functions transferred. We have to then get the people transferred. We then have to get the budget in linked to those people transferred. And that will talk to the salaries as well as their operational budget. And thirdly, we have to then get their tools of trade also transferred into BMA. So the key aspect here is around the budget issues. So what Treasury had said to us is, as you have seen in terms of what slide number 31 indicates, in quarter two, we are indicating that the BMA budget structure will be submitted in National Treasury. What that means is, Honorable Chair and the committee members, is we need to be able to go to National Treasury and say, we were able to get this number of people from agriculture, this number of people from immigration, this number of people from health, this number of people from police, and this number of people from the environment. And also, we are also in terms of the DPWI, the transfer of assets. Then we need to get all of that money, hence we use the word reinventing of the budget. All of that money that will be linked to those individuals across the department, including the money that is being used by DPWI as we speak in taking care of the infrastructure, particularly in servicing the REMCO projects in the port of entry as it were. So all of that money will have to then be put into one clear pot. Once we have done that, then we need to go to National Treasury and say, this is what we have in terms of all of the integration exercises. And it is on that basis that National Treasury will be able to then make a determination based on our actual requirements over and above the integration that we need to be able to go forward in as far as the issues are concerned. So that is why the figure is not there yet, but it is going to be there in the medium-term budget policy statement. Let me then stop there, Honorable Chair and the committee members. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner, for your responses. TDG Sigama.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Minister, good morning, Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members. I'll be responding to two questions that were raised. The first one was raised by Honorable Kanyile in terms of the weekend overtime, whether it was paid or not. Yes, we have we've been paying our staff overtime. And you'll recall, Honorable, that during the peak period, we normally identify our peaks and troughs. And where we've got peaks, then that's where we make sure that we then have additional capacity and we extend our personal hours so that we service those people who are in their need. Yes, but once the capacity is up to speed, then we should be able to operate, I think, at a constant motion so that at the end of the day, everybody who visits our offices there during official hours are assisted at that point. Then the next question, Chairperson, was around the issue around the rollout bank. As you are aware, I think that question was raised by Honorable Van der Merwe. As you are aware, we currently have got about 28 banks that are fully operational, they are connected. And indeed, as DG alluded to the point before, we are really working closely with our service providers to make sure that we enter into a triple P agreement, wherein with as soon as the agreement is approved, then we'll make sure that we ramp up or we roll out to additional banks so that we then also refer our clients to some of the banks. So we also have volunteers that are also assisting in both the banks as well as offices over the weekend. And our volunteers are predominantly three youth people who are also operating for free, wherein they then organize themselves. They then indicate which offices will be opening over the weekend. And then we support them with all the equipment and resources. And at the end of the day, then they work closely with office managers to open offices and then work closely with our counselors and other people who reside in those areas so that they can be assisted with home affairs services. So those are the questions that are more relevant to civics, and I'd like to stop there. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Titichi Sigama. Titichi Mavusa.
No, thanks, Chairperson and honorable members. Just to answer on one matter relating to the booking system, we indeed, honorable Pile, we have piloted the booking system in 24 offices. We are running a hybrid model where we have booked clients and those that walk in. So where we are now is that the civil services through Mr. Skama, they've given us 43 offices to work with. These are the large offices which got a number of a huge number of clients. So out of those, we've identified those that will convert to 100% booking for the two products only. Obviously, the rest of other products will still be working. But I think the experience that clients have given us was quite impressive. So there are three offices we're working with. It's going to be the Centurion office, the Weinberg office in Cape Town, and the Mgeni office during the month of May. So we have a communications plan. The team actually we met with this morning at 8. So that plan obviously will be communicating with clients to ramp up the awareness so that come the 1st of June, those three offices will then convert to 100%. When it comes to issues of collections, we have removed it out of the system. We're only looking at the applications because we want also to increase the slots per hour because currently there were fewer. So also we want to deal with the issues of no shows. But I think the progress and the experience that clients that have actually used the system was quite a good feedback that we have received. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DTG Mavusto. Acting CFO, Ngasana, Mr. Ngasana.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Committee Members, Minister, Deputy Minister. I'll just check the one question, Honorable Chair, regarding the office where we are currently at, which is called Hallmark. So what has happened, actually the department, committee members, operates in three buildings around Pretoria. So we've got a building in Hatfield where the Minister, the Deputy Minister sits, as well as the BMA. Which is called FSI, and then we've got the office called BVR, where DDG Sigama and his team sits, and then we've got the office, I think the one that the committee members visited, Hallmark, where the DG and other DDG sits. So we've put through a feasibility plan to consolidate these offices into one office, and we have then also applied to the Department of Public Works for the allocation of land to build our own health office, home affairs head office. And the land has been allocated at the government precinct in Salvacop, just opposite Jose Mapuru prison. That's where the office is going to be built, and other government offices are also being built there. In addition to that, because this is being done through a private, public-private partnership, we've then submitted the feasibility study to the National Treasury for their approval. And that approval was then received on the 31st of March 2022. So last month, we got that approval from Treasury to then proceed to the next stage of the project. And the next stage, which we're going to be busy with in the current financial year, will be the procurement now of the third parties that are going to construct that office then. Office block, and we envisage that the appointment should be done by the 31st of March 2023, and then with on the 1st of April 2023, then the construction will commence, and which will take roughly between 24 months and 36 months. Chairperson, so that's the response to that question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Acting CFO. That going DDG, okay?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to the Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, honorable members. Firstly, I would like to thank the Chairperson and the honorable members for the well wishes that you have given me this morning. I really do appreciate it. And I also want to thank you for all the support and advice that you have given the department and during my tenure here, and in particular the immigration services. And I believe that with the implementation of your recommendations with regard to immigration services, that we would be able to have a more functional immigration services in the very near future. Thank you very much for that, members. Chairperson, I'm just going to deal with the issue raised by Honorable Ruiz with regard to risk, what we mean by risk-based immigration or managing immigration based on risk. Before the implementation of the risk-based approach to managing migration, Honorable Chairperson, the immigration value chain was fragmented, and it was largely driven by regulatory compliance as opposed to a more proactive management of risks based on intelligence. So what we would do is we would, if there's any application or someone comes to a port of entry, we would merely look if he has a passport, if the passport is valid, stamp the passport and let the person proceed into the country. Or if the person applies for a visa, simply look if he has all the relevant documents without doing due diligence on that application and allowing people into the country. Now, this then accounts for a large number of overstayers in our country. We simply ignore our immigration laws. And it is also a reason why international criminals, for instance, prefer South Africa as a destination. And this becomes then a leverage point to conduct illicit trade linked to people smuggling, as well as people trafficking. Now, when we talk about a risk-based approach to managing migration, we are talking about an integration of competencies across immigration and other stakeholder departments. And this, of course, has the benefit of extending the reach of the immigration value chain and enhances security as well as the integrity of the state. So, Honorable Ruiz, a key methodology then for managing immigration risk is to build a complete history of all of those who visited South Africa and then link this to an effective screening process of visitors to South Africa even before they leave their country of origin, like with the APP that we have introduced, where we can do offshore screening of people coming into the country. And basically the purpose of a risk methodology is to ensure that we are able to profile people visiting South Africa well in advance, as well as test the credibility of their travel documentation, their personal identity, and also be able to run background checks on against them on international stop lists that are available to us. But to do this, Honorable Roos, through you, Honorable Chairperson, a risk-based methodology is underpinned by a seamless interface of technology, reporting systems, as well as proactive management of immigration by the department. And we have not implemented yet in South Africa all of the requirements to be able to manage risk-based immigration. Parts of the strategy was implemented, but mainly our weakness is around integrated systems. And until that has been done, we will always have holes within the immigration management within South Africa. But we are working at closing that. We have a document, Chairperson, that we can avail to the members of the portfolio committee that outlines in detail the risk-based approach to managing migration, as well as the strategy, and we would make that available if there's a need for that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKay, and all the DTGs who responded. Can I check with the DG before I invite the DM and the minister? DG, are we?
No, thanks. Thanks, Chairperson. And I think the only one that probably I thought the acting CFO was going to speak to was the question raised by Honorable Pillay around the modernization of our offices. I think in KZN, that work has already started in Stanger, for example, and we hope Public Works will ramp up the work in Mokopane, Toyando, and Taung with regards to modernizing those offices. We have also registered 15 offices with the infrastructure office in the presidency for modernization as part of a PPP, and that work is underway, Chairperson. I think, Honorable Mulekwa, I think the Moretele matter as part of that Hammanskraal area, it's something that's under our consideration in terms of the access model. For sure, we'll respond in due course. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, DG. Deputy Minister?
No, thank you very much, Chair, and greetings to all the members of the Portfolio Committee. Just a few issues that I wanted to respond to. The first one is around the digitization program, that it's not just about scanning documents, Chair, but scanning documents is only but one part of the project as a whole. It is about rearranging those particular records, capturing them into the system. So I don't think we should just take it as if it's just about scanning documents and then it ends there. It's actually just the basic part of the project, the issue of scanning documents. The issuing of birth certificates, Chair, in hospitals is not just about only making it simpler for us to issue birth certificates to parents, but it is also about protecting the credibility of our national population register, because we want to capture births where they actually happen. And I think we have been doing very good progress in the far as rolling out. I think in the past 3 months this year, we opened about 3 new facilities, one in Gauteng, another one in Newcastle. So we've been opening those facilities. And where we have not reached, we should be able to reach. I must admit that we have picked up in some instances where staff members will really be careless, where they have the capacity to print out a birth certificate there and there. They will actually tell a person to come back later. And we've been correcting that. That the reason why we have those facilities is so that where there is a printer, we are able to issue the birth certificate on the spot. But we must also accept, colleagues and honorable members, that we do have children in our education system. It does not mean that all the children in our education system, you will find them in position of birth certificates. Some of them, they do not have birth certificates because they do not qualify for South African citizenship.
mainly so due to the court judgment that said even foreign national children who are in South Africa, irregardless of how their conditions are in terms of them accessing the country, they must not be taken out of school, and those children remain in school. But we can't wake up and then say we're going to have a blanket approach to say for everyone who's in a South African school, they must get a South African citizenship. Yes, we are looking at other ways on how we can regularize those people, possibly look at the issue of issuing them with study visas and so on. So you can never accept that everyone who is in school must therefore means that they must be having a PET certificate. In fact, just in the previous year, in the previous matric results that were issued, you will find that only about 1,000 of the matriculants actually did not have identity documents. And most of the 1,000 that we had, it's because they were not qualifying for South African citizenship. So we have always made sure that we do that. And we are now ramping up our campaign, not just to focus on grade 12 learners, but also in terms of grade 11 learners. And lastly, Chair, I don't think we should be promoting late registration of birth and making excuses for people that after giving birth, you then can stay with the child at home for a period of more than 60 days or even 6 months and so on. We should really be encouraging everyone to register their birth within 30 days, because that makes it easy for us to promote and protect the credibility of our population registers. So if we can all just speak in one tone on that, because you don't even need to go to a home affairs office with a child. If you're left the hospital without registering a child, you don't need to go back to the home affairs office and carry a child with you. As long as you have all the necessary documentation like records of birth, you should still be able to register a child. Those are issues that I thought I should respond to.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister Nzunza, for your responses and comments. Minister.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, most of the answers, questions have been answered. Let me start with a few, start with Honorable Ruos. Honorable Ruos has made a calculation based on a wrong figure or a wrong assumption. He said something like, we are going to hire young people to digitize 3 records per day. And as I listened to him carefully, he was basing it on the assumption that we've got 30 million records. We do not have 30 million records, Honorable Ruos. We've got 300 million records, and they are increasing every single day. Every time a child is born and get their birth certificate, a new record is opened. So when these people, these 10,000 young start sitting, the number they start with will keep on increasing every day until they finish the whole digitization. The issue of offices open on Saturday, which many members have raised, I'm really itching like you do, Honorable Member, but we can't help it. We have reached a deadlock with the unions. They don't want to budge because they've made one single demand. Our thinking about Saturday work is that certain people will work on Saturday and they won't do certain days of the week. In other words, it will be in shift. That's what we are thinking. But the unions are saying, no, use the same people who during the week and give them overtime payment. Now, Mr. Sigama has just reported to you that way when we give our people overtime, we actually pay them for that overtime. It's not small amounts of money. It's big amounts of money. Now, what the unions are asking from us is overtime for life. Can you imagine anywhere, whether in the public or private sector, where there is overtime work for life? In other words, people must work during the week and then use same people on Saturdays and you pay them overtime. Where will we get money to do such a thing? If we do that, Honorable Ruos, you will come back to say you are spending too much money, but the productivity is low. So we are not agreeing on that one. And that's why the stalemate, whether we go on for 2 years and 3 years negotiating the stalemate, we believe the solution will be when we pass the overall Home Affairs Bill, because we are then arguing the reason that we are in this situation, the police, the army, health workers, they don't have to debate this issue of whether people work on Saturdays or Sunday. It's part of their work because it's in their bill, you know, the type of work they are doing. So the Home Affairs Bill is going to change Home Affairs to be one of the security departments that can also work over the weekend. The issue of shortage of staff, yes, has already been answered and there's clear shortage. Now, let me jump to the question on from Honorable Kanile, which is important, about the Hillbrow scam. I'm not sure, I was at pains to explain to the public in the country that the scam in Hillbrow is not only scamming Home Affairs. Maybe it's because Home Affairs produces ground documents. Almost every department or entity, even in the private sector, that produce any form of document, that scam, you'll find it in that scam. They are producing bank cards. Home Affairs doesn't produce bank cards. They are producing licenses. Home Affairs doesn't produce any license. They produce SIRA cards, a private security industry, regulatory authority certificate, which Home Affairs doesn't produce. There are bank statements, which Home Affairs doesn't produce. There are SASA cards, which Home Affairs doesn't produce. So there are whole lots of documents which are being produced there, but it's only that they are also, they even have passports from other countries for that matter. And we don't produce passports from other countries. We don't even know how they got them. So at the moment, we are investigating the ground documents from Home Affairs. Are they authentic or are they fake? Now we have gone into the archives to dig the records. If our records of digitized, Honorable Ruos, we will have been even to give you an answer. I personally, on Saturday after Good Friday, the day after Good Friday, I spent the day there at Hillbrow with the station commander looking at this issue. It has been now brought into the department. We are checking the archives, the records one by one. Can you imagine if our records were digitized? We'll be giving an answer exactly what that guy has done. But now we have to investigate and investigate and investigate. The other issues on immigration, that will be my last on immigration. Yes, Honorable Van der Merwe, the DG did answer that it's a global problem. But yes, we have got a crisis. We cannot deny that anymore. It's a very serious crisis. My thinking is the questions you are asking about 220 operations, etc. Yes, we do have consequences, outcomes. In this 220 operation, what was found, how many employers were punished, what have they done, and the punishment is just a fine, a small fine which they pay and go on with the activity. What am I trying to tell you? That I think those are bent aids, even increasing the immigration of operations from 220 to 540 is bent aid. What we need is a complete overhaul of the immigration system in the country. And I'm busy with that. I'm even discussing with the cabinet about that. It has to be a huge one, not the small changes we are making. And in this regard, we have already started consulting even bodies like the United Nations itself to find out, we have investigated how do we measure to other countries. 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, all the ambassadors of South Africa from all over the world were called to DERCO for a conference, a four-day conference. They were addressed by some ministers. I'm one of them. Many of them raised these issues, comparing us to other countries on immigration, telling us what their experiences are and saying they are prepared to help by giving us information on how some countries are handling this. I think we based our immigration a lot on assumptions. 28 years ago after democracy. We've now learned our lessons, and we think the time of a complete overhaul is here, and we are busy with that. And very soon, I'm sure we'll be giving you a game plan, Honorable Fanlumebe, as you're asking. You are 100% right. We need a very clear game plan, not the Band-Aid we are doing at the moment. But I think Band-Aid is important, starting with the operation and what the Border Management Authority will be doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thanks, Deputy Minister. Thanks, the Director General and your team. Honourable members, thanks very much for being interacted with the APP. You've raised your comments, and I think we're appreciating the good work that the Minister with the entire team, you continuously to demonstrate, but also within the context of service delivery. We want to appreciate the continuous work that all the recommendations of the Portfolio Committee, even where there are challenges, you do come back to the Portfolio Committee and highlight some of the areas that you might have identified. Commissioner Masiapata, I think the committee agrees that we'll invite you in the interval or in the quarterly to come and update the Portfolio Committee on the progress implementation on the BMA. And we must take also this to appreciate your work with seen with your team that you've already on the ground to respond to the issues that are before the BMA. Thanks, members. We're going to step off this item. Other issues that were referred for further consultation, the team of Home Affairs will then interact with our administrators on some of the issues that they could not have responded. We're stepping off this item and we request the minister to give us an update. We have requested the minister and the team to give us an update on Home Affairs intervention in the Eastern Cape and KZN. As you know, that the joint special sitting now which will be starting will be reflecting on the state of a disaster in KZN. Just briefly talk to the report, and then the members will interact so that we release members to attend the sitting at 12 o'clock. I'm trying to give you 10 minutes, the minister and the DG, to deal with the report. Thanks very much, Minister.
Yeah, I'll start just by summarizing, and I'll get the DDG, which Mr. Sigama, but especially the DM, who was the leader of the operations in KZN, but I'll start summarizing. Honorable members, KwaZulu-Natal has got a total of 7 offices. On the 11th of April, that is the day on which the damage and the flooding took place, the day after all the flooding and the damage took place, all 77 offices were offline. They couldn't just function. The connections were completely washed away. And so none of the Home Affairs offices could ever function on that day. But we worked around the clock. The following day, on the 12th, 75 offices opened to the public. Only 2 offices could not function. That's the office in Stenga and the office in Chatsworth. And because the office in Stenga had no connectivity at all, the office in Sadek in Chatsworth was completely flooded. But I want to state, honorable members, unlike the other departments, we did not have infrastructural damage to our offices. And remember, these are offices that are owned by private individuals in which, Chairperson, can you still hear me?
Yes, proceed, Minister. We're listening.
Yes. Yeah. So in which Home Affairs are tenants. Now, none of them were physically damaged. We were just lucky. So on the 12th, as I've said, 75 out of 77 offices were operating. And on the 13th, we started issuing death certificates. There is something I want to clarify, which I've been clarifying with the media, because there were claims. There was a lady from the funeral industry, coordinating funeral industry, who kept on claiming that they are not able to bury their beloved ones because these are not natural deaths. They need postmortems, which postmortems, of course, are conducted by the Department of Health. Minister Joe Pasha did come out and show how many pathologists they've sent to KZN to help. But on our side, our job is just to produce documents, especially death certificates. And I wanted to emphasize to honorable members here, there is no way that a person won't be buried because Home Affairs has failed to produce a death certificate. Even during the highest problems of COVID, with a very high death rate, there was not a time when we failed to produce a death certificate, for the simple reason that we are able to produce a death certificate manually. And later on, when things have settled, somebody has been buried, it's then that we go and put it in our systems and computerize it in our national population register, and then and start giving the family a computerized certificate. So on the 13th, just means 2 days after I told you, only 75 of our officers were working, we're able to produce 81 death certificates, and 50 of them were produced in one office only, the Umgeni office, which you know is very a bit problematic. From there on the 14th, all the offices started operating, and except the Chatsworth office, as I've already said. And where an office like the Chatsworth office doesn't operate, we then go send mobiles. Where there are still roads, we send mobiles. Then our member, the provincial manager, Mr. Mkwabe, provincial manager of Home Affairs, is sitting in the disaster management center in KZN. Every discussion there is participating. And they agreed with him that they will provide him with a list of the families that are affected, so that we target them and give them a special deed. And what is a special deed? That they are not going to pay a cent for any service we give them, and that if where possible, we go where they are. And that's the program that the deputy minister has started, to go where the communities are in order to give them the requisite documents. Lastly, Chair, remember, it's not difficult to give somebody a temporary identification certificate. And some people have been claiming on TV that it's a problem. It's not, because that problem person is already in our systems. It's already in the National Population Register. To reproduce a document that's already in the National Population Register, it's a matter of minutes. That's why when you want a temporary identification certificate, you will live with it. On the day you go to Home Affairs, when you go home, you'll be having that certificate. Just like when you want the birth certificate, you don't apply, you live with it on that particular day. Just like when a child wants a birth certificate, if it's the first 30 days of life, you go home with it on that particular day. Where you will delay a few days is if you apply and say, I don't want the temporary certificate, I want the smart card. They were promised that the affected families will give the smart card for a period of between 3 days and a week after application. That's where we are, Chairperson. In the Eastern Cape, the assessment shows that there is no additional measure that is needed more than what we are already doing on an everyday basis. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm going to invite the Deputy Minister to run on the presentation. Then members, if you have comments, you comment for noting. Then the DDGs may do responses to that report, so that we then work on our time schedule. Deputy Minister?
No, thank you very much, Chair. Probably what I will do is just to do a summary of what we had actually been doing, but in terms of more details, I'm looking at time as well, so I'm a bit skeptical of running through the presentation one-on-one. But the reason why we had actually prepared this presentation is to give background and also what becomes our role as Home Affairs in an instance where there are instances of disaster. This is not for the first time that we have been running through a disaster situation. In Ethekwini, we have actually been involved before, where fire actually broke out, and we had to replace some of the documents of people who lost their documents on the... I will request that we just stop in this particular slide, because it will help us make that particular summary. So we have also done it again. We had also done it in the Western Cape, in the residence of Langa, where a fire broke out. Now, what had happened is that on the 11th of April 2022, in the evening, the floods broke out in KwaZulu-Natal, which resulted into a loss of life, resulted into people losing their properties, resulted into major destruction in terms of strategic infrastructure. And Home Affairs was also affected due to the loss of strategic infrastructure in our network architecture systems. And as a result, we had a network problem as from the 12th. Now, that particular problem which happened on the 12th, by the 13th, it was then resolved, which means out of the 77 offices that we have in KZN, 75 of them were fully operational, with the exception of Tongaat as well as Chatsworth. In Chatsworth, as from the 12th, we had already put in an interim mechanism by deploying a mobile unit to be there to also assist. I've also been there myself to assess the mobile unit. It is a legacy office, Chatsworth office, but now people are also able to get their documentation in the sense of smart ID cards and so on. The department then took a decision that those who are affected by the disaster was then get their documentation for free. We started the media campaign around that, the minister speaking to Newsroom 24, if not ENCA. We also engaged Ukhozi FM and other radio station, SAFM, so that everyone who was affected can know that we are coming to their areas and they will be qualifying for them to get their documents for free. The system that we then developed is a system that allows us to work with disaster management centers. As people were affected by disaster, they were then moved into safe places. And ours was that as soon as those safe places were opened up, we were able to move into them and get the people in a gathered kind of a way. So the disaster centers will issue us with the list. The list will then be confirmed with the local councillor in that particular SWAT. We'll then deploy a mobile unit to go to that particular area and get the applications. The applications that we are dealing with, one, death certificates are continuing to be issued, and they were continuing to be issued. I mean, in the period that the actually affected us, we do have statistics of the services that we're still able to carry out. If I can just run through my records here. Death certificates issued, about 600 TICs that were issued, 682 birth certificates, 1,250 registration applications. Those happened. It shows that in overall KZN, these are figures only for KZN, which shows that in the area, in the period wherein floods had actually affected KZN, we were still operational. The areas that we had actually visited are as follows. Now, where we had actually deployed the mobile units, we had deployed mobile units in Chelimnyama, with also deployed mobile units in Tehase. We had also deployed mobile units in Umlazi, I think in my area as well. So we had actually saved quite a number of people. I think in Chelimnyama we saved more than 100 people on that particular day. We are now awaiting the lists that should be coming through from Ilembe so that we can also join in Ilembe. As lists trickle through, we do send mobiles to those areas in collaboration with the councillors to make sure that everyone gets the documents that they require. So we have not had really serious challenges in terms of the role that has been played by Home Affairs in making sure that people get their certificates. Now, this project will run up until such a time when we conclude all the people in terms of the list that we have been given. I would think maybe Mrs. Gama will then be able to take us through some of the technicalities, but the slide or that is showing in our screen clearly indicates people who have been helped and people who are needing our help in the various areas that we had visited. And the devastation is really with the office in Chatsworth. Already we're in discussions with the municipality to look at alternative venues, because the problem there is also about the location of the building as well as the quality of the building, which really concerns us. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Did you just Gama comments?
Thank you very much.
I think addition, GDC Gama.
Okay, thanks very much, Chairperson. Thanks, Minister. Thanks, Deputy Minister. I think a lot of work has been covered by Minister and the Deputy Minister. Yes, the additions are that as a plan going forward in KZN, Chairperson, from today and tomorrow will be in Kugu region, wherein we have already deployed two mobile units that are really assisting clients there. And at the end of the day, we should be getting reports. And I must also indicate that, Chairperson, we have received the list of those who have applied. Back office have started now processing all those IDs, and we hope by next week we'll be going back to the clients, and we'll invite our principals to also showcase when we hand back the products that have been processed. And on the 28th and the 29th, Chairperson, will be in the Ilembe region, wherein we have already organized our clients so that they can then apply for those documents. And suffice to say, ever since we started with this project, Chairperson, we have already issued more than 476 documents to those people who are available on the day. And the products that we have issued already emanate from what Minister said. That includes a birth certificate, death certificate, temporary identity certificate, and those are documents that were issued on the spot. So in a nutshell, Chairperson, we are doing very well. So far, we have not received a lot of complaints from the ground. We are working very well with other stakeholders. In Eastern Cape, as indicated by Minister, we have run our assessment as from last week, and they indicated that indeed, they are quite happy with the assessment that has been done so far. And in terms of the demand, there's no need for us really to send additional resources. They are managing, and we should be able to then get the final report on what is happening in that particular area. In terms of finances, I think the slide before that shows that already we have spent close to 55,980. Wherein 179 were for those clients who applied for smart ID cards, which cost about 52,000, and the reprint cost us close to 3,000 if you add the two. So all in all, the total number of fees that has to be waived by our DG, Director General, it will cost us 55,980. Remember, this is just work in progress. As and when we receive the applications, we then update our books and then write submissions for waiver. So all in all, that's the report from Home Affairs Chair, and thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Minister GM and DG Sigama. I hope Honorable Pile and Honorable Van der Merwe, they are interacting with the work of your department physically in that area, in their constituency area. I'm going to invite comments quickly. The reports for noting will also get an update as we move along from members. Just comments, then we'll end this item. Honorable Lukwase.
Thank you very much, Chair. I don't actually have much to say than say to the department. We applaud them for always being on their toes, for always being available to step in whenever intervention from their side is needed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair, and a thank you to the department from my side for the interventions in a very difficult time.
Because I'm going to screen on the other building.
So a big thank you from my side. But Chair, just one question though. We face these disaster scenarios from time to time. And we've recently had a scenario with Ivory Park where there was a disaster there, but the disaster management report didn't have the names of the people on there. What do we do in those situations? What does Home Affairs do? Is there anything that can be done? Or if the names of the persons affected are not on the disaster management report, is there nothing that Home Affairs can do to assist those victims? Thank you.
Honorable Tito. Thank you, Honorable Ross. Honorable Tito. Honorable Kanyele.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We welcome the report and the intervention and applaud the intervention that has been made by the Department of Home Affairs. We have read the report in detail. And lastly, Chairperson, I wish to express my condolences to the families and friends of those who were affected in KZN and the Eastern Cape. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Van der Merwe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. First and foremost, I would also like to thank the department for the assistance that they are giving to the people of KwaZulu-Natal and to the Eastern Cape. In particular, I was there during the floods, and Chairperson, it was a horrific period. And I would maybe just like to thank the department for making available these replacement documents, as you had alluded to in your introductory remarks, for free. I think it will go a long way to assist the affected families. But Chairperson, may I just appeal that, can I please be given the list of the mobile units, the routes where they'll be going, so that we can make those available to our constituencies and to the various mayors and the different municipalities, so that they are aware when these units will be making their way to the various areas. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Fandalmer. Honorable Muleko.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We would like to appreciate the quick response and the intervention by the department. We also would like to note and welcome the report as presented. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Mkwini. Honorable Ramlobe. Honorable Pile.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. I think I must join all my other honorable members in applauding the department for their swift response, but I must particularly place emphasis on the fee waiver. I think this shows a government in action and a government that is caring. I must applaud the Minister, DM, and Home Affairs officials for taking that decision, you know, so quickly. Chair, there's one challenge we face is that the list of persons who require IDs are being submitted through councillors and through municipalities. And I think there is a challenge in some cases where councillors are non-existent in some wards. And I think we have to find a way around that in terms of ensuring that our people don't suffer at the end. They must still be able to get the service. And again, yes, I am in touch with the office in Chatsworth. In fact, I am scheduled to be there today in between our sittings because they've identified space that they need some negotiations to be done in order for them to be able to secure a space. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Minister, a closing remark on the issues raised as the leader of the Home Affairs to that part of the program.
Thank you very much. Firstly, let me thank Honorable Brendan Pile. I think your intervention will help us quite a lot with reference to the Chatsworth office, because we need to get a good space for us to be able to operate in. On the issue of the local councils, we are in touch with the local mayors, but we'll give Honorable Lizelle the details of where we are going beforehand so that we can also share the information with those who need the information shared for them. I really would like to express that we really need for us to be able to talk in one voice, particularly around issues of disaster, so that we spread the message. Honorable Ross, we really need the list of the people who are affected, because we have seen others really trying to take advantage of the situation who are not affected by the disaster, but see this as a free rider for them to then go and get documents that they have been delaying for quite some time. If we do not get it from the local disaster teams, surely we can get something from the local councillor to say these are the people who are affected and will surely step in to assist. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, members and the minister and the DM and your team for presenting this item. We hope that you will interact with all members of parliament, different political parties, all councillors and the stakeholders in order to make sure that the issues that are raised in relation to this matter are attended to by the department. And thanks very much for the hard work that you have moved swiftly to interface with our people and render services to our people. Thanks very much, members, in the presentations, the interactions. We'll take forward some of the issues that could not have been responded accurately to this meeting. And I think we'll take a responsibility to make sure that the recommendations members have raised and recommendation that the department have suggested in the course of the APP will make sure that they are implemented. I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone who attended this meeting. The meeting stands adjourned as we're joining the joint sitting of Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister.